The wheel of time turns, and ages come and pass, leaving memories that become legend. Legend fades to myth, and even myth is long forgotten when the age that gave it birth comes again. In one age, called the Third Age by some, an age yet to come, an age long past, a wind rose above the misty peaks of Imferal. The wind was not the beginning. There are neither beginnings nor endings to the turning of the wheel of time. But it was a beginning. Crisp and light, the wind danced across fields of new mountain grass, stiff with frost. That frost lingered past first light, sheltered by the omnipresent clouds that hung like a death mask high above. It had been weeks since those clouds had budged, and the wan yellowed grass showed it. The wind churned morning mist, moving southward, chilling a small pride of Torm. They reclined on a flat, lichen-stained granite shelf, waiting to bask in morning sunlight that would not arrive. The wind poured over the shelf, racing down a hillside of scraggly mura trees, with rope-like bark and green tufts of thick, needle-like leaves atop them. At the base of the foothills, the wind turned eastward, passing an open plain kept free of trees and scrub by the soldier's axe. The killing field surrounded 13 deep black fortresses. They were tall and cut entirely from unpolished black marble, their stonework left rough-hewn to give them a primal, unformed feeling of strength. These were towers meant for war. By tradition, they were unoccupied. How long that would last, how long tradition itself would be remembered in a continent in chaos, remained to be seen. The wind continued eastward, and soon it was playing with the masts of half-burned ships on the docks of Takasram. Out into the sleeping bay it passed the attackers, enormous great ships with sails painted blood red. They sailed southward, their grisly work done. The wind blew out onto land again, past smoldering towns and villages, open plains filled with troops and docks fat with warships. Smoke, war calls, and banners flew above dying grass and beneath the dockmaster's gloomy sky. Men did not whisper that this might be the end of times. They yelled it. The fields of peace were aflame. The Tower of Ravens was broken, as prophesied, and a murderer openly ruled in Shandar. This was a time to lift one's sword and choose a side, then spill blood to give a final color to the dying land. The wind howled eastward over the famed Emerald Cliffs and coursed out over the ocean. Behind, smoke seemed to rise from the entire continent of Shanchan. For hours the wind blew, making what would have been called trade winds in another age, twisting between whited caps and dark, mysterious waves. Eventually the wind encountered another continent, this one quiet, like a man holding his breath before the headsman's axe fell. By the time the wind reached the enormous, broken-peaked mountain known as Dragon Mount, it had lost much of its strength. It passed around the base of the mountain, then through a large orchard of apple trees, lit by early afternoon sunlight. The once green leaves had faded to yellow. The wind passed by a low wooden fence, tied at joints with tan linen twine. Two figures stood there, a youth and a somber man in his later years. The older man wore a pair of worn brown trousers and a loose white shirt with wooden buttons. His face was so furrowed with wrinkles that it seemed kin to the bark of the trees. Almond Bunt didn't know a lot about orchards. Oh, he had planted a few trees back on his farm in Andor. Who didn't have a tree or two to fill in space on the dinner table? He'd planted a pair of walnut trees on the day he'd married Adrin. It felt good to have her trees there outside his window after she'd died. Running an orchard was something else entirely. There were nearly 300 trees in this field. It was his sister's orchard. He was visiting while his sons managed his farm near Carey's Ford. In his shirt pocket, Almond carried a letter from his sons. a desperate letter, pleading for help. But he couldn't go to them. He was needed here. Besides, it was a good time for him to be out of Andor. He was a Queen's man. There had been times recently when being a Queen's man could get someone into as much trouble as having one too many cows in his pasture.
"What do we do, Ullman?"
Adam asked.
"Those trees, they... Well, it ain't supposed to happen like this."
The boy of 13 had golden hair from his father's side. Ullman rubbed his chin, scratching at a patch of whiskers he'd missed during shaving. Han, Adam's older brother, approached them. The lad had carved Ullman a set of wooden teeth for an arrival gift earlier in the spring. Wondrous things, held together by wires, with gaps for the few remaining teeth he had. But if he chewed too hard, they'd go all out of shape. The rows of trees were straight and perfectly spaced. Gregor, Ullman's brother-in-law, always had been meticulous. But he was dead now, which was why Ullman had come. The neat rows of trees continued on for spans and spans, carefully pruned, fertilized, and watered. And during the night, every single one of them had shed their fruit. Tiny apples, barely as large as a man's thumb. Thousands of them. They'd shriveled during the night, then fallen. An entire crop, gone.
"I don't know what to say, lads,"
Ullman finally admitted.
"You at a loss for words?" Han said.
Adam's brother had darker coloring like his mother and was tall for his 15 years.
"Uncle, you usually have as much to say as a gleeman who's been at the brandy for half the night."
Han liked to maintain a strong front for his brother now that he was the man of the family. But sometimes it was good to be worried. And Ullman was worried. Very worried.
"We barely have a week's grain left," Adam said softly. "And what we got by promises on the crop. Nobody will give us anything now. Nobody has anything."
The orchard was one of the largest producers in the region. Half the men in the village worked it during one stage or another. They were depending on it. They needed it. With so much food going bad, with their stores used up during the unnatural winter. And then there was the incident that had killed Gregor. The man had walked around a corner over in Negan Bridge and vanished. When people went looking, all they found was a twisted leafless tree with a gray-white trunk that smelled of sulfur. The dragon's fang had been scrawled on a few doors that night. People were more and more nervous. Once, Ullman would have named them all fools, jumping at shadows and seeing bloody Trollocs under every cobblestone. Now? Well, now he wasn't so sure. He glanced eastward, toward Tarvalin. Could the witches be to blame for the failed crop?